have Perikov 9 Pusik Beis. It says, Vayom Asher Tavru with the Yargan El Oretz, when you cross over the Jordan River to the land. It says, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, Vakimot Silicho Avonim Gidolos, it's not until some Basid, you're going to set up for yourselves these huge stones and plaster them with plasters. Here's what's going on. Beginning of Harshis Kisel, where they're giving the last two mitzvos, really, I mean, writing a Sefer Torah in Hakel, I mentioned in Hazinu, but the last two mitzvos of the whole slew of mitzvos that they were given in the beginning of the Sefer. These are the last two, Bikurim and Maitzor Sheni. They're then told that when they go over to Eretz Yisrael, they're going to stand on two different mountains. There's going to be Har Grizim and Har Abel, and they're going to be split up into two different mountains, and they're going to be brachos and kolos. The Levim are going to call it out. They're going to answer amen to everything. And then after all that is over, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I want you to set up this, when you get over to Eretz Yisrael, I want you to set up in Gilgal on Har Abel, these huge stones, 12 massive stones are going to be set up, and you're going to write on them. It says, you're going to have these, because Savto Alavanim is called Dibra Torah, Zos Be'er Heitev. And Pasuk Ches, you're going to write on these stones all the words of the Torah very clearly. Now, just to think about that for a second, there are 304,805 letters in the Torah. These 12 stones would have to be huge just to contain all of those. Even if you would be able to split it up and say whatever it is, but the stones have to be absolutely massive. So that's one thing that we have to think about, that they wrote it. And Be'er Heitev, we have to wonder what that means. What does it mean to write it that clearly? That's number two. Number three, how do you write on stones? Are they engraving it? What are they doing exactly to put it on stones? Is there paint involved? Is it charcoal? What exactly does it mean that they're putting it on top? And there's other questions that we're going to have as we go on over here. Now, first, this parsha was accomplished by Yoshua. Yoshua and Perek Dalet, they crossed over the miraculously held up in the air waters of the Jordan River. The Jordan River went straight up instead of straight down. Instead of going downstream, it went straight up to Shemayim. And it stood there while the Kohanim stood by the banks of the river with their feet where the water once was, holding the Aron Kodesh. Kohanim were holding the Aron Kodesh. The water started going up. Bnei Yisrael crossed over. It wasn't like the Yam Suf. The Yam Suf was a split in the actual Yam Suf. By the river just flowed upward instead of downstream. It went up. The people crossed over. The Kohanim stood there with the stones. As they stood there, 12 of the Shvatim, Nisim, from every Shevet, came by and took a stone from underneath the feet of the Kohanim. They placed the stone from the land underneath the Kohanim's feet, and they took a huge stone from underneath their feet. They took those 12 stones, some say there were 24 stones, and they placed them. 12 of them in Gilgal, 12 of them on Har Abel, or the same stones that they had in Gilgal, they then brought over to Har Abel. On those stones, they wrote down the entire Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu gave over to Yoshua. And Yoshua wrote everything down. That's when he added on those last days. Psukim, as the Gemara Bava Basra says, and that's how the Rabbeinu Bachai understands everything that happened in that order, in that way, as well as Rashi and Sota as well. There is a question if it's three different stones or two different sets of stones, whatever it's going to be, three sets or two sets, regardless, that's the pshat. Now, Rashi tells us, the Be'er Heitev, when they wrote it, it means that they wrote the Torah in 70 languages. 70 different languages when they wrote it up, and that's based on the Gemara in Sota Lamed Beis, and seemingly the reason why is to make it accessible to all the nations of the world. Any nation that wanted to know what the Torah said would be able to go to these rocks, see what's written on there, and even if they didn't speak Hebrew, it wouldn't matter. It's written in every other language that they would understand. I'm sorry?
Until Yavah.
Until Yavin, the Septuagint. That's already a good call. We know that we fast. One of the three reasons why we fast on Asara B'Teves is because Ptolemy, one of the Greek / Egyptian kings, when Greeks and Egypt were together at the same time, forced the Jews to translate the Torah into what we call the Septuagint, which eventually led to the King James Bible and all the different versions that come from there. And that was a curse that we had to write down the Sefer Torah into another language. But here, they're lechachila, told by a curse. Baruch would write it in 70 languages. And this opinion of Rashi is not just Rashi's, it's the Gemara's. And there is no other Rishon, although the Rishon that says Be'er Heitev might be translated differently, everyone agrees in some way, shape, or form that the Torah was translated into 70 languages and put on top of these rocks. Okay, the Balaturim says you can learn it from a Gematria. He gets a Gematria and he says, HaTorah Hazos Be'er Heitev. This Torah being written very clearly, HaTorah Hazos Be'er Heitev plus 1, is 1250. The Gematria of Gam B'Shivim Lashonos. That's how the Baal HaTurim learns it. There's another way of learning up this Gematria. It's brought by the Mizrahi in the 1300s, where the Mizrahi wrote down, if you write the word Ba'er Heitev, there's something called Milut. If you write up the letters like this, you write a He, which is the Gematria of 5, then a Hey Yud, which is a gematria of 15, a Hey Yud Tes, which is 24, and then Hey Yud Tes Beis is in 26. 26 plus 24 plus 15 plus 5 is 70 altogether. It's an amazing type of gematria called Miloi, and that's how we learned that it was 70 languages altogether, that all together it was brought together like that. There was a Rabbeinu Ephraim, there's Miamboleis, but either way, they all learn from the words Beritiv that it translates into 70 languages. Now let's try to understand the why. The Chassam Sofer says that when they wrote the Mikra on the rock, right, on those rocks, they put the rocks in Gilgal, and then as we said, they brought them onto Har Ebal. Now, here's what the Chassam Sofer says. There were three sets of rocks, and they did like this. On the rocks that they put inside the Jordan River, they wrote all the entire Torah in Hebrew. On the rocks that they set up in Gilgal, they again wrote it in Hebrew. And on Har Ebal, the third set of rocks, says the Chassam Sofer, they wrote it in 70 languages. So meaning, you had Hebrew, and then Targum, he says. A Targum that comprised of all 70 languages. Not that all 70 languages had their own Torah, that the Torah was written in French and Spanish and English, etc., but rather all the languages were represented by that third translation of the Torah that went on to Har Ebal. So he says the following, he says, you have to understand, when we say that there are 70 pshatim to the Torah, and that you translate the Torah into 70 different ways, what that means is this. There are 70 ways of understanding the text of the Chumash in a pashat manner. Unkelus translated in one way and put it into Targum in Aramaic, that was one of the 70 versions. Meaning, we know that Bereishis Bara Elokim Etz Hashamayim Etz Haaretz means in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. That we know. Nobody has any doubts about that. That's pshat. That's pshat, he says, according to Unkelus. Unkelus says that that's pshat. There are 69 other ways of understanding the Torah in pshat, in a simplistic explanation that does not mean in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. How to understand it, how to split up the letters, what to do with it, those are all different translations. What are we going to say, Brian?
What else could it mean? All you're doing is translating.
We literally, we are so far gone when it comes to this, we have no idea. We literally have no idea. There are 69 other ways of understanding it. There's a pshat that understands in a different manner altogether. And that means, says the Chassam Sofer, that's why the Septuagint was so bad. They're translating into Greek, not the Greek version of the Targum of the Torah, but they're translating into Greek Unkelus' version of the Torah, which means you're already taking one pshat and you're making it that's the only pshat that people know. And that's what happened. After they translated it into the Septuagint and it became that language, that was translated into all these different languages. So we all think, this is pshat beyond the Torah. What else can you learn? What else could there be? We literally don't have an inkling of what the rest of the psukim could, how they could translate and how to understand it. Says the Chassam Sofer, that's what was so bad. Says the Chassam Sofer, that's where the minute came from. Because there were two rocks that had the Hebrew Torah written on them, and one set of rocks that had the Targum written on them. We have a concept called Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum. It came from those three sets of rocks that we do Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum. As a side note, by the way, if you don't do Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum, I'm not going to tell you that you should or else you're not Jewish. I'm just going to tell you, there is no other way to finish the Chumash. I love talking to people when they tell me, like, the Chumash doesn't make any sense. And I say, have you ever finished it? Again, it's only 89,000 words. You've read novels, you've read novellas that have more words than the Torah. Have you ever finished it? No. You have no right to critique anything until you finish the book. You might know the beginning, you might know the end, and a little bit in the middle. But you can't critique it. The only way to finish the book is to do Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum. To do it twice Mikra and once English. I know not all opinions say that English works as Targum. Good. When you become a massive, massive Talmud Chacham and you learn through that rush and you go through the tour, then you can argue on me, and I totally hear you. You might have to do Targum on close by that time. Until that time, you should be doing it two times the regular Mikra, one time in English. If you can get to Rashi, awesome, and read it through the entire way through without a question every Shabbos. If you're wondering when to do it in between Aliyahs. It's probably better than talking to the person next to you. Okay, do it in between Aliyahs. If you're a Gabbai, I'm sorry.
You can't read. You can't do that. You can't do.
I do it every week.
You can read it three times in between Aliyahs.
No, I do. I'll tell you what I do. At Mincha of Shabbos the week before, this is not with Achil. I'm just telling you that I won't do it otherwise. So this is what I do. At Mincha of the Shabbos the week before, I do the entire Parsha. So meaning when they're laning, I do Rishon with them. And then after Mincha, before Shalosh Shodis, I run through the rest of the Parsha. That's once that I do in a Chumash. As the Shliach tzibur is reading, I read along with him, so I get my second chumash. And then in between aliyahs, I do targum, and once they finish, come on, there's so much wasted time. And the gabbais are doing this and that and the other. No offense, Gabbai, I'm just saying. Right, everybody's doing this and that the other. You get Misha Berach, and then you get another Misha Berach, you get another Misha Berach. You can finish literally the entire, you can finish Shas in the time that you have on regular seven aliyahs on Shabbos. You can easily finish. So just go. You can finish everything right then. Just go through it. And if you need, you all can read art. I mean, I'm assuming you all can read English. So just read an art scroll chumash that has it there. And if you can't read English, then I'm sorry. But either way, Rav Hirsch says a translation and a copy of this Torah was put up on these rocks in order for the nations to read it. Meaning, l'chadchila, we want people for us from the other nations to come and read this. People think that we're exclusive and that we don't. And we are exclusive. There are certain gerim that we don't want gerim. We're willing to say to them, look, keep your shevamitz benoch. You don't need to be Jewish. There's no reason for you to be Jewish. But nonetheless, we allow anyone to read the Torah if they want to. You want to see what a Kaddish Baruch Hu gave us? It's here, right in front of you. Allow yourself to read it. You can do whatever it is. And that's because, says Rav Hirsch, we understand what our mission is, to make the world better and not just ourselves. We understand that they also should be involved, although they're not commanded to keep the mitzvot. That's never the intention. The intention is not for them to keep Shabbos and not for them to put on tefillin or to wear tzitzit or anything like that. The intention is for them to read about what it's like to do such things, and then from there they'll understand that there's something that they have to do. They'll go to a Jew and say, what am I supposed to do? And you'll tell them the Shabbat is Zaynoch. And that's that. That's the shot. We were never supposed to, in theory, kill all the people of Eretz Canaan. Had the Canaanim gotten up, says Rav Hirsch, and get up there and say, we'll keep the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. We'll be normal human beings, because the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach are not crazy. We'll be normal human beings. Had they said that, they would have lived. They had to give up their Avodah Zarah. They had to stop murdering, stop doing Avodah Zarah, Gili Rais, etc. If they act like normal, seichelic human beings, they'll have everything they need. In fact, in Sota Lamed Heim Abayz, the Gemara says that each nation sent a representative that went to these stones to peel off the plaster that was put upon the rocks in order to read and copy down what was written on the stones. It didn't help. They brought it back to their nations, and the nations didn't read it. The Levi Aschein, he's the grandson of the Bach, says that no one expected them to keep all those 613, but the expectation was to be impressed by it. They all sent the representatives to bring it back and say, look at what they have. They have a history book within a law book, within a book that explains how a Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. And yet no one took it to heart, and because of that, they're being punished. That's the idea, that they had a chance to learn from it and didn't do so. Now, the Kedushas Levi says the reason why they have to know this Torah is that they'll be able to understand why the Jews were so going to get Eretz Yisrael. They may look at us and say, well, why do you get to live there? We want to live there. Why do you get this place? And that's the pshat. They'll see our history. They'll see the words of God. They'll understand that that's the bris of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was the deal HaKadosh Baruch Hu made in order for us to get it. On the other hand, on page 2,
what's
up there? I thought it was usher to teach Torah. You are correct. You cannot teach them Torah Sheba'al Peh. You cannot teach them the meanings behind the mitzvot and what we're doing in spirit. You can't explain to them why tefillin are boxes and black with straps, etc. But can you tell them that there's a concept of tefillin? Yes.
Yeah, but then they understand, what does it mean? What's the symbol?
And that, you're vague. You're vague. When you go into the symbolism, there's no need to get that. That's the shot.
So you're saying you teach the Torah with Mixal, but you can't really learn Torah with Mixal without Torah Shabbat.
You can't understand it fully. You can learn it. That's what it means. Mishpatim bal yadu'um. You do not let them know, have a yediyah in the Mishpatim. But to tell them about it, you can be Megaleh to them. There's no problem with that. That halakha is there. Fine with that.
You can also answer here. There's nobody who's actively teaching them. It's written on the rocks. They're coming.
That's true also. Yeah. They're reading it for themselves, taking their own translation, making their own translations. The Klei Chemda. Klei Chemda says almost the exact opposite. It was not easy for the other nations to read from these rocks. The peeling back of the plaster in order to get to the word underneath and understand what was there was not easy. It was to show the Jews that even though the Torah would be accessible for them, it would be accessible for the other nations. Nonetheless, it wouldn't come easy. We said Nasav and Ishma, they rejected the Torah, they said no. For that reason, for us, it was going to be easy. There would be the Hebrew written there, we would all know the Torah would be given over to everybody there. For them, it's going to be plastered over, covered up, they have to work hard in order to reveal it. That's the idea behind it. And for them, it would take years to be able to fashion and go through and to find out what they needed. That's going to assuage the Jews' fears when they're afraid. Maybe the other nations will be chosen with us. If they see the Torah, they see how awesome it is, maybe they'll come with us. Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not going to happen. They're not going to try as hard to be able to get it through. They'll look at it, but they're not going to do any for anymore.
There's enough God love to go around.
In a way, we still want to be that chosen nation. Every son wants to be the favorite son.
Yeah, but that's a little magic.
Yeah. It's a reality of life.
I mean, we should be happy if they do.
We are happy for them. Happy for them. But nonetheless, we should get something else for saying that to the Nishma. Somebody who comes late to the party should also be rewarded. You still feel, I was here first, I should get more than somebody who just came late to the party at the very, very end. So granted, they should get something, but not that. The Mashiach says something interesting. Ishbitzer, okay, this is a Hasidish a little bit. David Melch was worried when the other nations see the Torah and study for themselves. This is what's going to happen. Every person among the other nations that reads it will have their own chelik in Torah. At the end of your Shemona Esrei, you've noticed, you get the Beis HaMikdash. V'sein chalkenu b'sorasecha. Each person is asking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I understand, I'm not going to learn the entire Torah. There's no way that's going to happen. There's too many sparm out there. There's too much for you to know. But allow me to get my chelik. Allow me to understand what my portion of the Torah is, and that my portion is necessary. That without me, Torah would not be able to work in the world. That you'd have other people that are doing their own thing. But I have my portion. Without me, the Torah would be missing something. Allow me to get that portion, understand it, and fully be there for it. That's the idea behind it. We're asking for Saint Chalkenu B'Sorasecha. David HaMelech was worried that that was exactly what the nations were going to get here. When they had the 70 languages of the Torah, there would be certain ideas that we would not understand and we wouldn't be able to get without them. And we'd need them to translate it and to be involved in the Torah without keeping mitzvos. They would do their own thing, but yet still they would have chokhmah within them, work on the Torah, and without them we wouldn't fully understand the Torah. That we need them, Elsa David HaMelech was afraid, we need them in order to be privy to everything we needed. But then he looked closer and he understood. The other nations, they weren't supposed to get a portion of it. They were supposed to look at it, be impressed by it, work on themselves from it, and become better people because of it. But not that they have a portion, not that they're part of the party, so to speak. We're the ones who have the portion, we're the ones who have everything, they're the ones who are allowed to join us, but on the outside in order to get to get the Torah itself. And if they're Zocha to be able to join us at the end of the day, great. And if they're not Zocha to join us at the end of the day, they still get the reward. The reward is still there, and they still get their Olam Haba, and whatever it is that they have is a chelik in Olam Haba, the same way that we can. There's a Kedushas Levi in Parsha Devarim, and I'll tell you honestly, this Kedushas Levi was a problem by me for years. I didn't fully understand it, and I can't tell you that I fully understand it in this as well. He asked why there are certain words in the Torah that are written other than Hebrew. For example, when Yaakov Avinu makes a bris with Laban, he calls the place Galed, and Laban called it Yagar Sahadusa. Yagar Sadusa, that's an Aramaic, two Aramaic words. What's the point, says the Kedushas Levi, in writing Aramaic words in the Torah? We all know what tefillin are called in the Torah, right? They're not called tefillin. Tefillin is the plural of the word tefillah. Tefillah is the actual word, and it comes from the word palil, to daven, to beg, to go, or whatever it is, but that's where it ends up coming from. What's the pshat behind the word tefillin? Where is that word written in the Torah? So we say it every day. So what's the word for it?
Totafos,
right? Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Totafos is tat b'kaspi shtayim upas b'afriki shtayim. That in two different languages, Caspian, whatever that is, and Afrikaans, tat and pas mean two and two. To tell you that there are four batin, right, on the tefillin, that you can see one by some tefillin shorosh, you see there's like those little lines, tat and pas, to tell me that there's four different things, four different batin, four different houses for the tefillin clock to go inside. So listen to this for a second. If that's true, Totafos is where that's come from. Says the Kedushas Levi, well, we need that? Why didn't you just write the word Arba? I mean, is that difficult? It's four letters. What's the point in writing Totafos? So says the Kedushas Levi, the life source of every nation is their language. If we have their language in the Torah, that means we have an access, we have an ability to bypass the system, so to speak, and get into the real guts of the nation, to understand their chiyus, where they come from. The fact that they exist is because the Torah says they exist. So the 70 languages are written in the Torah, so that the 70 nations form from the Torah, which means the following, and it's such a crazy line, says the Kedushas Levi. We're going to be in Gullus, in exile, by all 70 nations of the world. world in order to gain the respect of the nations and to grow among the nations and to become great among the nations, we need to have access to their language and thus their chiyus, their light source. So we have it in the Torah, we learn the Torah, and by learning the Torah, we have access to everything they have, and we become great within their system. Somehow, by us learning some word in the Torah, which is apparently English, but written, transfixed in within the letters of the Torah itself, somehow we're able to become great, even in a place that speaks English. That's the idea, says the Kedushas Levi, and that allows us to become great. It seems to me that according to that shot, you didn't need to write the Torah 70 times on the stones in 70 different languages. You just have to write it once. And within that writing once, you have all the 70 languages within. But I never saw that among the Rishonim. It seems that the Rishonim understood it as much as it's all 70.
Way. So if someone's knowledgeable...
Yeah, that's going to work that way.
Languages. For those 70 languages, they're not going to be able to understand.
No, 100% true. 100% true. The Abarbanel says the reason why the stones have to have the Torah written on them is they came inside Eretz Yisrael. So Pashut. It's a mezuzah. The same way we have a mezuzah that protects us when we walk into a house, says the Abarbanel, that's what we have when we walk inside Eretz Yisrael. You have a mezuzah.
Is that on the right door post?
I didn't notice. But either way, Har Abel was actually on the left. Either way, regardless, but the Abarbanel says it's out. All specific to be there. It's supposed to be protecting us. The Chlal, the Frat, that's the idea behind it. Now, in Aleinu L'Shabeach, you know that the Dibrei Chaim of Sons, he says the following. He makes sure that that every letter of the Torah is so precious that it can protect us. Dibrei Chaim of Sons once had a woman approach him who had an issue nursing her child. She couldn't nurse her child, and the child was in danger. It was at the time where, you know, formula was not popular. It was 100 years ago, so it was difficult. If the child didn't nurse, the child could die. So the Dibrei Sons wrote a kamiya. Now what's a kamiya? Kamiya is an amulet that they used to put Shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or like random, like Kabbalistic type source things inside it. He wrote it on a piece of paper, put it inside the amulet, made them promise never to open up the amulet, and then gave it to the woman, and apparently it worked perfectly. The woman was able to now feed her child, and the child was perfectly fine. The child grew up to be Rebel Yashiv, I don't know. But it was everything was perfectly fine, everything worked out perfectly, right? So when the Dibrei Chaim passed away, this apparently was the only kamiya that he had ever written. So they wanted to track down the kamiya and see what was written inside it. Okay, so they tracked it down, they found that the woman had died, they realized that the kamiya was somewhere, they found it finally. So took the kamiya, they brought it back, they opened it up, and inside were the words Eldad and Medad. Eldad and Medad, just that. Now, you should know, Eldad. Dad in Hebrew is the word for chest. So Eldad and Medad is the word that he was writing inside there. That was it. Two words, eight letters inside this kamiya, and that's what worked for the woman to be able to nurse. Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, the author of Aleinu L'Shabeach, says the pshat behind that Dibrei Chaim of Sons is that he understood there is nothing more powerful than the words of the Torah when used correctly. If we use it correctly, we understand how to use the Torah correctly, there is nothing that is as powerful as that. And just writing that in a kamiya works. Just writing that in a kamiya. There's a famous, and there are other famous stories about kamiyas that had these types of things where they would write up kamiyas. Not the Ben Ish Chai, the Sfardim always wrote kamiyas. Those were always happening. But what they wrote, there was one famous one where Rabbi Kiva Eger wrote a kamiya, and in the kamiya he only wrote down a toastless in Sukkah, dap tazayinim abeis, about tzchach. That was to heal a person. Random, right? Of course, I would have written that one also. So what was written upon the stones? So really, what was written upon the stones? What?
Did the guy live?
The guy, probably. That would be a terrible story. He actually died before he got the kamiya. Let's make an assumption over here. I'm making the assumption that it worked. The Paneach Raza says it's a bit of a pella. He says it. He says what everybody else thinks. Everybody else is thinking it. When you're reading the Chumash, you're saying, there's no way they wrote 71 different versions of the Torah on 12 stones, or 36 stones, right, that went throughout Eretz Yisrael. There's no way. There's no way they could write that much. First of all, do you know how long it takes to write a Sefer Torah, let alone 71 Sefer Torah? There's no way they could do it. Says the Paneach Raza, I find it to be a bit of a pella that they actually wrote, right? They actually wrote 71 different, you know, Sefer Torah on the rocks. I don't understand the Paneach Raza. It's a bit of a wonder. That's like the craziest thing in the world. world, that they wrote 71 Sifrei Torah, and they put it all down. For this reason, it seems, Rav Sadia Gaon, the Ibn Ezra, Moshe Zakenim, the Chizkuni, say they only wrote down the mitzvos. They only wrote down the 613 mitzvos, that's what they wrote down. The Ramban, that you should know, by the way, the Abarbanel says that it was a short history of what they wrote down. Just a short history all about the Jews. So when anybody wanted to see what the Jews did, this is like their short history, and they wrote that in 70 languages. The Ralbach and Josephus both say that the rocks contain curses and brachos that are mentioned at the end of the parsha, showing us what will happen if we're good, what will happen if we're bad. But the Ramban and the Rabbeinu Bachaya, quoting the Sefer Tagin, which is a medrash that we don't really know much about. It is quoted in Otzra Midrashim by Eisenstein, so it is a real medrash. And the Rashbam say it refers to the entire Torah was written from the beginning until the very, very end. They copied everything out and put it there and then translated into all 70 languages. Okay, so how did it fit on the stones? The Ramban says either there were huge stones, or it was massive miracles. Now remember, if there were huge stones, the fact that they carried them out of the Jordan River and brought them up a mountain is a miracle in and of itself. These stones would have been that big to carry that much, that many words. It's going to be like that.
But basically, the Egyptians built the pyramid with huge stones.
Yeah, and the Kofa.
We don't know how it was done.
No, agreed.
Clearly, the ancients had a way of
but going up a mountain. You know what? By Hara Maria was also. But you know, it is amazing what they were able to do. Or it was Mycenaeism. Says Ramban, it's Mycenaeism. I'll tell you. The Miamuli says that the Gedolos has a missing vav to tell you that the rocks became smaller, so that they'd be able to travel with the stones on them. The stones minimized themselves so they could travel. And then they became bigger when they came to a certain place. Either way, that's called a miracle, my friends. You don't get much more of a miracle than that. That's pretty awesome in that way. But either way, regardless, the Ian Yaakov says the writing was done with the Shamir worm. That happens to also be a little bit of a crazy thing. That's how it went on the rock. But almost everybody else says that it was written in plaster. It's put on plaster itself. Now, here's a story that I've never heard before. To me, it's one of the craziest things I've ever heard in my life. Listen, it's brought down by the Pardes Yosef. He speaks about a certain Rav who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, right? And he was a He visited his Rebbe, the Kedushas Levi, right, Rebbe Levi Yitzchak Berditchev, and he sat there for many weeks. He was learning Basmada for many weeks by the Kedushas Levi. His wife, the Rebbetzin, sent a message to the Kedushas Levi saying, "My husband just ditched me. I have no money, no food. I have no idea where he is, right? But I've got kids to feed. I don't know where my husband is." So her husband was a bit of a space out. Totally forgot that he had to be Mefarnes' wife and kids, right? And was sitting by the Kedushas Levi, right, and learning Basmada. So the Kedushas Levi said, "All right, I'll take care of you, your daughters, the daughters that you have to marry off, because the Chassidus is sorry, you got to have daughters to marry off. So I'll take care of all of this. I know you have no sense to your name. I'll take care of all of it." Said the Kedushas Levi, "Don't worry, your husband's coming back soon, and he'll have all the money that you're going to need to do everything you need to do." At the time, he then sent for his gabbai. He sent for his gabbai, and he said to his gabbai, I believe his name was Rapinchos, and he told his gabbai, "I need you to take this rug, and I want you to go traveling from city to city to go collect for him." And the problem was, Russia at the time was at war with France, Germany, with Ashkenaz. They were at war at this time. And because of the war, you needed a permit to be out in the streets. If you didn't have that permit, you were thrown in jail. So you couldn't be on the streets without it. So Pinchas, the gabbai, said to the Christian lady, "I can't go out without a permit. Where am I going to get a permit?" Kedushas Levi said, "I'll write you a permit." Took out a piece of paper and wrote something on the piece of paper, folded it up, sealed it in an envelope, and said, "Do not show it to the regular policeman. Say, if you get pulled over, say that you need to show it to the highest ranking officer that they can find." So Pinchas, you know, said, "All right, read the story, so what are you going to do, right?" So he went on the wagon, he took this rug with him, they started traveling, they were pulled over almost immediately. So they were pulled over, and he said, "Listen, I got to show this to the highest ranking officer possible." So they left the wagon there with the rug inside there. They brought the gabbai, Reb Pinchas, to the highest ranking officer there, and it was a guy who was in charge of the whole surrounding area, one of the generals of the army, whatever it was, who was going to be out there. So they brought it in, they brought the Reb Pinchas in, and he showed him the letter. Guy opened it up, took out the piece of paper, and read it. And then he had that, you know, shocked look where the eyebrows go up, and you just like, and then he read it again. And he looked at it, and he read it again. And he looked at the gabbai, and he said, "Who wrote this letter?" Now the guy was scared out of his mind. Rapinchos didn't want to tell him because he thought for sure he's going to kill the Kedushas Levi, right? There's no way I'm going to tell him that the Kedushas Levi wrote this letter. He's like, I don't want to say. So he said, no, you don't understand. This is crazy, this letter. I understand," this guy said, the Russian officer said, "I understand 8 different languages. Each time I read this letter, I'm reading it in a different language. I'm reading it in Russian, in Yiddish, in German, I guess it's the same, right? And I'm seeing, every time I read it through, I can see 8 different languages here, but it's the same words. So who wrote this letter? So Pinchas said, the Kedushas Leiber of Levi Yisim Verdichev. He said, is this a rabbi, whatever? He said, it's a rabbi. He said, okay, here's what I'm going to do, okay? This is the coolest thing I've ever seen before in my life. I'm going to keep this with me so that when I go to war, it will protect me in war. It was written by a holy man. I'm going to keep this as a holy something, whatever. What were you trying to do? Why were you using this? He said, we were going to collect for this certain rabbi to marry off his daughters. He took out a money bag, gave it over to Pinchas the Gabbai. He said to Pinchas, use this to make sure that his daughter gets everything. Get off the streets. Go back home. Do not travel anymore. Okay? I don't want you traveling anymore. Just go back and I'll send a whole entourage of people with you so you don't worry about the policemen that are going to catch you because you're not going to have any signs or anything like that on you. So don't worry, I'll take care of it, but I get to keep this letter. That's okay with you, I'll keep the letter, then I'll do everything else. I'll pay for the weddings and everything. Pinchas the Gabbai was like, I'm good with that. That's perfectly fine. Sends them back, and he brings them back, right, to wherever they were supposed to go. The Rav obviously had all the money, and I'm sure there was a happily ever after at some point, right? When this story was told over to Reb Zvi Hirsch of Rimanov, when it was told over to Reb Zvi Hirsch of Rimanov, so he said that the Kedushas Levi used the shame of Shin Dalid Yud, Shakai, that we call it, in order, he wrote it in the letter. The shame of Shin Dalid Yud has a skula, he says, to be able to help you understand all 70 languages. And if you use it correctly, you can write in all 70 languages. You can see it if you write it with Shakai itself. Says Reb Zvi Hirsch Mirimanov, and that's how, it was like a side note, and that's how they wrote all 70 languages on these rocks, and everybody was able to understand it. You looked at the rocks, and if you looked once, you saw Hebrew. You looked the second time, it was Latin. You looked the third time, it was French. Every time you looked, it was a different language, because the Shem Shakai was written on the rocks by Moshe Rabbeinu or by Yoshua to be able to understand every single one, and it's hinted to in the Parsha. The Sarita Osam Basid. You should plaster it with plaster. Sid is written Shin Yud Dalid. Not Samach Yud Dalid, but Shin Yud Dalid. It was written Bishakai. Says Reb Zvi Hirsch Mirimanov to be able to understand how they were able to fit everything on there and how they ended up writing inside there. One of the best stories I've heard in a long time to be able to understand this. Okay, another question you got to ask over here. Okay, if they were, it's interesting. If they put plaster on the stones, how were they able to put the shemos of Hashem on these stones and then plaster them as if you're erasing it? There's halacha, by the way. Is putting wax on a letter of a Sefer Torah erasing the letter of the Sefer Torah? Rabbi Kiv Eger was asked that. Is putting wax considered erasing a letter? This Sid seems like it would erase the letters. I'm not going to answer it. I'm just going to tell you it's a big kasha.
What was the purpose of the Sid in the beginning? Why did he even do that?
Remember, to make it harder for the other nations to be able to see what was underneath. But on that question, I'm just going to tell you the following. There's a Malbim. I don't know if I'm going to be able to say both of these. There's a Malbim, a Netziv, and then one cool thing that I want to get to at the very end. And I don't have that much time, so maybe you can read the Netziv yourself. I'm just going to say, the Gemara in Sota brings down a Machlokas, Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda, how these rocks were written. Okay, this is what happened. Reb Yehuda says they wrote all the words of the Torah on the stones, and then they covered them with plaster. That's what Reb Yehuda said. Reb Shimon says, wait a second, how are they supposed to see the words? And he said, you'd have to peel it off in order to read the words underneath. That's what Reb Yehuda holds. Reb Shimon holds, no. They put it a plaster on, and then they wrote the letters on top of the plaster. You got it? That's the machlokas. Reb Yehuda says letters under the plaster, or Shimon says it was on top of the plaster. Says the Malbim, not a machlokas. They're both agreeing. They're both saying two different parts. Here's the pshat. He says, you got to read through the psukim over here. I didn't write down all the psukim in the beginning. It was 8 psukim altogether. Really, 7 psukim altogether. There's a lot of repetition in these 7 psukim. In fact, twice it says that they wrote down on the stones all the words of the Torah. 2 times it says it. You write down all the words, then it says later on, and you wrote down all the words, but er heitev. You wrote it very clearly. Why do you have to write it twice? Says the Malbim, here's what happened over here. Before they crossed over the Jordan River, they picked out a base for all 12 large stones. They already made a base, they had it set up, and they had everything ready for when they were going to put the 12 large stones out. When they waited, they took the stones out of the river, they put it on top of the bases, this is on the other side of the Jordan River, and then they plastered the stones. Now, when you put on plaster on something, while it's still wet, you can't write on them. When it gets too hard, you have to chisel through them, then it's too hard. But there's a way where, you know how like when cement right, is starting to harden, and you put your name inside there, and you think you're cool, but you're really vandalizing. So this is what they did with the plaster. They let it get a little hard, but not so hard. On that very day, when they put on the plaster, within a couple hours, when they crossed over, they immediately wrote the Sefer Torah into the plaster on top of the rocks, and then when it hardened with the words on top of the rocks themselves. Now, they had to do it quickly. They weren't able to write it clearly. They wrote the entire Torah as they were given by Moshe Rabbeinu to Yoshua. They gave it over to him. They wrote it on top, and they put it on top of there. They did everything as it was, one after the other, right? They put it on top of the stones. Then they brought these stones with the plaster on them, with the words of the Torah on top of them, up to Har Ebal. When it was brought up to Har Ebal, says the Malbim, they plastered them again. And on top of that plaster, they waited a little bit, they gave the brachos, they brought Mizbeach, they brought korbanos, they gave Mizbeach, whatever it was. After they did all that, they wrote another Torah on top of that, Ba'er Heitev. It was written beautifully, in beautiful letters, very clearly so that everybody could read it on top. Here's a shot. Ready? Hold on. The Malbim says, those outside letters had to be clear so that everybody could read them. Weather, the rain, the snow, everything else that's going to happen, right, is going to ruin the letters. So what would they keep doing? They would keep redoing the stones. Every time the weather ruined a little bit of the plaster, they would re-plaster them and rewrite the words on top of the Torah so that everybody had access to these stones and they could all read it. They'd all be able to learn the Torah by reading what's outside in the stones. But there was going to be a time when people are going to say, you know what, the Jews made this up. There's no real Torah. They keep rewriting it, right? They could rewrite whatever they want. At that point, you'll cut off the plaster on top and you'll read what's on the plaster on the bottom. Because that bottom will still be there. And you'll see that it's exactly the same. Once they do that and they see that it's exactly the same, that's the pshat. So here's the pshat, says the Malbim. You're going to write on the stones immediately when you cross over the Jordan River, but not Be'er Heitev. You're going to write it quickly and you're just going to put it on there. Then you're going to plaster them again when you get up to Har Ebal. And when you do that, that's when you're going to write it Be'er Heitev. It is so meduyik in the psukim. It's one of the greatest pshatim. If you read it through the psukim, it makes so much sense. That's exactly what happened over here. Says the Malbim. That's the idea behind it. Now I'm going to skip the Netziv for right now, but the Netziv is an awesome thing as well about a doctor, etc. I'm going to skip over the Rav Tzadok HaKohen or the Ben Ish Chai as well. Just going to go down to the very, very end. The Noam Elimelech, or Elimelech Milizhinsk. I got a lot of Hasidic Torah this week. I'm sorry, but you know, you have to. I also put a Ben Ish Chai in there. I mean, come on, right? But otherwise, the Noam Elimelech says, it was written by Be'er Heitev, said future generations would be able to explain them well and would be able to turn the curses that they see in the Torah into brachos. See, if we really were able to understand the Torah well, we'd look at it and we'd only see brachos. For example, I'm just going to give you one quick example. You all know the Tokla is in this week's parsha, right? Parachopchas pasuk lamed aleph. Okay, remember this. 28:31. Parachopchas lamed aleph. Said the chidah is a proof that all the curses are going to turn into blessings. All the curses are going to be turned into blessings at some point, and it's all going to be awesome. So what's that pasuk? So here's what it says. The pasuk actually says, "Shor chatuach leinecha v'lo sochu mimenu." Your ox is going to be slaughtered in front of your eyes, and you won't be able to eat from it. Chamor kagazmo lefenecha v'lo yoshuv lach. Your donkey is going to be stolen from you and it won't be returned to you. Your sheep are going to be given over to your enemies and you will not have anyone helping you or saving you. Got it? Says the Chidah, you want to show how this pasuk can be turned into a bracha? Read it backwards. Ready? Moshiach lecha, you'll have a savior, the ein loydach nesunos, and you won't be given over to your enemies. Tzon chalach yeshuv, your sheep will be given back to you, the loma fanecha gazel chamorcha, and your donkey will never be stolen from you. Mimenu tzochal, you'll eat from your own things, the lo leinecha tzvoach shorcha, and it won't be that your ox is slaughtered in front of your eyes. It's the only pasuk that works that way, by the way. You try for everything else, it just doesn't make any sense. The whole thing doesn't work that way. Like, for example, Lehei Rafei, to be healed, Suchal lo, you won't be able to. This just doesn't work. It's an awesome pasuk, but it tells you, if you know, if you write it for Be'er Heitev, there's an ability to be able to look at the psukim and turn it around, says in Noam Elimelech, that's why it's written Be'er Heitev. You'll be able to see it with your own eyes, you'll be able to translate it correctly and make it into something that's a bracha instead of a curse. Let's go ahead, guys. We'll stop with this right